1 Corinthians 16 and verse 14, let all your things be done with charity. And it's very interesting that the King James chose sometimes to translate the word agape as charity, and sometimes they chose to translate it as love. And a lot of people are confused by that and think that, well, it must be a different word, but it's not. It would have been good if they had chosen every time agape appeared to use charity to kind of show the difference between that kind of love and other kinds of love that are mentioned in the Bible. But when they kind of half-heartedly do it, it gets kind of confusing sometimes. So even though all of the passages that we look at tonight are not going to have the word charity in them, they do have the Greek word agape in them. And that's why we picked them. Because this passage in 1 Corinthians 16, 14, what it really means is godly love. That's what it's referring to. Let all your things be done with godly love. And the idea there, of course, is that we are not to let anything be done out of selfishness, out of selfish ambition, out of selfish desires. But everything that we do needs to be done out of what is best for all concerned. And sometimes that may not be pleasant for all concerned. You know, sometimes it means that individual suffering, because that's what's best for all concerned. When someone has to face punishment, when someone has to face discipline, it's not pleasant at the time. They suffer. But in the long run, that's for the best and for their good. We're going to look at charity. I know that you've probably heard the statement. I've used it in the past. In matters of faith, unity. In matters of opinion, liberty. In all things, charity. That statement has been attributed to any number of people throughout the years. And it's been very difficult to actually track down who really said it. It's kind of just one of those old proverbs that people pass around. And it's very interesting because the Catholic Church has been given credit for it. Some of the priests in the 5th century were given credit for it. John Wesley, who began the Methodist Church, has been given credit for it. Some of the those who began the Restoration Movement have at times been given credit for it. But in actuality, we don't really know where that statement came from. Nobody wrote it down and then had it trademarked or copyrighted. We don't really know who said it first. And it's interesting that all of these different religious groups who believe different things use that same phrase. But the phrase itself is a very good one. That in matters of faith, there should be unity. In matters of opinion, there should be liberty. But in everything that we do, there should always be charity. There should always be love. Even when we have to take a squalling child out to discipline them, there should be love. I saw some of the looks on her. That's been my child on a few occasions too. We should always have love in everything that we do. So, the confusion sometimes over unity and liberty and charity and how those three things work together causes a lot of problems in the religious world. You have some people who think, well, liberty in everything. Everybody can just do whatever they want to do. You have others who say, unity in everything. You've got to think just like me on everything. And then you've got some who never practice charity at all. I was telling Ron a story a few days ago about a particular family who believed very strongly in the seventh-day Sabbath. And my car had broken down, and I had walked a mile to get to their house. And I knocked on the door, and it was a Saturday afternoon. I knocked on the door and asked if I could. Said, no, we can't use the phone today because it's the Sabbath day. Well, that wasn't very loving, in my opinion. And seeing how I was the one who was in need at the time, my opinion seemed to be pretty important. So I had to wind up walking another half a mile down the road to another house to find somebody who would let me use the phone because it was a Saturday. Well, Jesus dealt with those people who had that kind of an idea. They were upset at Him because He had healed somebody on the Sabbath day. And He said, now wait a minute. If your sheep or your ox falls in the ditch on the Sabbath day, won't you go and get it out? And then He asked the question, of how much more value is a man than a sheep? And we need to understand that love and loving individuals is the fundamental principle in Christianity. Love must come first. Now, that doesn't mean that we ignore doctrine because of love. Love actually forces us to the doctrine. So let's look at that. Let's learn to have charity or love in disagreements over matters of faith. How can we do that? Well, see, Jesus says in Luke 11 and verse 42, but woe unto you, Pharisees, for you tithe the mint and the rue and all manner of herbs and pass over judgment and the love of God. He says, here you are, you're tithing all these little, just these little plants that are growing in your garden, and you want to make sure God gets a tenth of those, but you're missing out on judgment and the love of God. But then Jesus says something interesting. He says, these ought you to have done, and not to leave the other undone. So Jesus doesn't say, hey, don't worry about doing the little things. He doesn't say those little things aren't important. But what He does say is, don't get so wrapped up in those little details that you forget the big picture. And that's what the Pharisees were often guilty of doing. And sometimes we can be guilty of that too. We can get so wrapped up in one issue. And it may be something that God has spoken about. It may be something that's right, and that there is a right and wrong, and there's wrapped up in that one thing that we forget to show love. And we may become hateful and spiteful. I don't know the name of the religious group, and I wouldn't name them if I did. But there's a group that goes around anytime there is a funeral for someone who was homosexual. They go around to those funerals and they scream about how the homosexuals are going to hell, and they holler all these things at these little funerals. Well, needless to say, the family and friends of those individuals who have died aren't very interested in wanting to be like those people. Because see, is homosexuality a sin? Yes. Is someone who lives a life of homosexuality going to be lost? Yes. But is it loving to go to the funerals of those individuals and start screaming at their friends and loved ones? No. So we can't get so wrapped up in one issue that we forget the love that goes along with it. And that's what those Pharisees did. And we've got to be careful that we don't do those things. It's not that we can't preach against them and teach against them and even try to get people out of those things. We do need to do that. But we don't get so wrapped up in one issue that we forget about love. I think, too, about Eric Rudolph, I think was his name, that bombed the abortion clinic up in Birmingham. We know that God hates hands that shed innocent blood. And we know that abortion is a despicable thing that's destroying so many lives in our country. But the fact that it's a disgusting thing that's destroying lives certainly doesn't give us the right or the obligation to destroy more lives. That's the wrong response. We need to respond with love and compassion toward those who are caught up in these things. But in matters of faith, Paul says, for in Jesus Christ neither circumcision availeth anything, nor uncircumcision, but faith which worked by love. That faith's got to work. You have a great faith, but you got to have the love to go with it. But some people go to the other extreme and they say, well, love, 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 huggy, happy, feely, warm, fuzzy, everything's wonderful. And Paul addresses that, or John rather addresses that in 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3. Now remember, John was known as the apostle of love, and he writes about love more in his three little letters there that are only altogether, all three of them, only seven chapters long. And he writes so much about love in there. But I want you to notice one of the things he says. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. And His commandments are not grievous. He said, that's love. You want real love? Real love is not just, oh, let's ignore everything and throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's not love. Love is, let's keep the commandments that God gave us. That's love. Because if we refuse to keep the commandments that God gave us, we're going to be lost. How can I say that I love you while allowing you to go down a path that leads to eternal destruction? That's not love. We must keep the commandments that God gave us. Along these lines as well, Revelation 2, 19 through 23. This is an amazing section of Scripture. Let's look at verse 19. If his letter to the church at Thyatira had stopped after verse 19, I know your works and your charity or your love and your service and your faith and your patience. And then he says again, and your works. And that the last are more than the first. So he mentions works two times in there, you know, and faith and love and service and patience. Man, this has got to be a great church, doesn't it? And if he stopped right there, Thyatira would be the church that would be the example for everyone. But he goes on in verse 20. He says, notwithstanding, I have a few things against you, because you suffer that woman Jezebel, which calls herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed unto idols. And I gave her space to repent of her fornication, and she did not repent. Behold, I will cast her into a bed, and them that commit adultery with her into great tribulation, unless they repent of their deeds. And I will kill her children with death, and all the churches shall know that I am he which searches the reins and the heart, and hearts. And I will give unto every one of you according to your works. That church sounded like they had it all together, didn't they? I mean, they had faith, they had works, they had love, they had patience. Sounded ideal. But you see, they had allowed their patience and their so-called love to keep them from standing up for what was right. We must demand that when it comes to matters of faith, matters of doctrine, either there is unity or there is no acceptance. And diversity doesn't work. We can't do that. Thyatira tried that. Unity and diversity. You know, I don't go with Jezebel and I don't follow her and her adulterous ways and her idolatrous thing. But you know, hey, that's their thing. That's what they do. And I don't do that. But who am I to judge them? Jesus said, okay, you've allowed this to go on? It's inexcusable. He said, I'm not going to allow it. We need to wake up. If we think that love, and it's, you know, it's good. Love is a good thing. Patience is a good thing. But there has to be a line drawn in the sand somewhere that says this far and no further. It's got to stop. And that's the kind of thing that gets a lot of churches into trouble, just like it did Thyatira, is they let the sin go on too long. They let false teachings and false doctrines slip in, and by the time they catch it, it's too far gone to stop it. It's happened in the past, and it's happening even now in the church. We've been started this morning with the young men a series of lessons called Waves of Change on this very topic of the changes that are trying to creep into the church. Because in their generation, they're going to be fighting this battle. There are people out there that are, if you could use the expression, they're hell-bent on changing the church. That's what they want. They want to destroy the church. It's nothing new. They had them in the first century too. Paul warned about them. Peter warned about them. Jude warned about them. There were people that wanted to change the church and destroy the church then as there are now. But we can't give them a moment's time. And that's the problem that so many times happens. But even in matters of disagreement over matters of faith, in those cases, even though we can't allow it, we still love that individual and want to lovingly correct those and teach and practice those things that are false. We can't give up. We have to hope that the truth will get through to them eventually. But at the same time, we can't allow them access to the children and to the weak in the faith and the young in the faith to allow that type of teaching to get in the hearts and minds of young people and of the next generations of Christians. We can't allow that. What about having charity in differences of opinion? Now, this one ought to be easier. I mean, it's easy to just get downright mad when people are trying to corrupt the truth. And it's easy to want to lose your temper and not react with love. But hey, when it's just a matter of opinion, I mean, am I going to fight with you over which restaurant we're going to for a holiday dinner? Well, maybe. Am I going to fuss and argue and fight over which song the song leader picks? Am I going to fuss and argue and fight over which kind of car you want to drive? Well, in our society today, it won't be long before some of you that came and pick up an SUV, you may be doing something illegal for long. They're going to outlaw those things. You know, but these are matters of opinion. It's your choice. What you had for lunch today, I don't dictate that to you. You don't dictate to me what I have for lunch. That's just a matter of opinion. But we have to be careful and do those things in a matter of love. In Romans chapter 14, Paul talks about this. And he talks about several different things there in Romans 14 and also in 1 Corinthians 8. He talks about these things, and he says, you know, some people do this way, and some people do it that way, and it's not wrong either way, it's okay. And he says, don't make a big deal out of it. But then he says this, in verse 15, he says, but if your brother is grieved with your meat. He was talking about a situation where, you know, the Jews believed that certain meats were unclean, and you just couldn't eat those meats because it was the law of God. And they were still, you know, that they've been living that way their whole life, and it was hard for them to accept the idea that, hey, you know what? God doesn't care anymore what meat you eat. It's not about that anymore. And so the Gentiles and the Jews were going to church together, and the Gentiles are eating pork and having catfish fries, and the Jews were going, I'm not supposed to eat that, but boy, it sure does smell good. And so Paul tries to point out to them that if you know that it's a problem for your brother, and you know it's going to cause him to do something that will violate his conscience, then you're not walking in love if you continue to do that to him. So what he tells them in essence is, go have your fish fries on your own time. Don't bring it to the church building and have your fellowship meal and have your fish fries in. Don't do that to your fellow Jewish brothers. Or then he also talked about the meat offered to idols. He said, you know, you go into the marketplace and you buy some meat and you don't know, but what, maybe that meat's been offered to an idol. And don't worry about it. Just eat it. But he says, you know, some people are going to know, hey, you know what? Bubba over here sells meat that he sacrifices to his idol before he brings it to the marketplace. I can't buy meat from him. So that person's coming to your house for dinner, make sure that you don't serve him that meat from Bubba's, because he's going to be upset at that. And it's going to cause him to think that he's sinned, because he thinks, oh, I've eaten meat that's been sacrificed to an idol. Oh, no. And it's hard for us to, imagine, because we don't think anything about meat. You know, we just go to the grocery store and buy whatever's there. But in the first century, that was a big deal. And we have to understand that there are going to be people who are going to come to the church and they're going to have qualms about certain things and they're going to be a little confused about certain things. But he says, but if your brother be grieved with your meat, then you're not walking in love. Don't destroy him with your meat for whom Christ died. And Paul went so far to say if it caused another brother to violate his conscience and sin, he wouldn't ever eat meat again as long as he lived. As long as the world stood, he'd never eat it again. Now, he was talking about, of course, that meat that had been sacrificed to idols that they considered to be unclean. But he said, I know that an idol's not anything, and I know there's nothing wrong with that meat. And he said, you go someplace and somebody feeds you something, you eat it without question, you just accept that. But there are some things that we need to understand. It would be better to give it up forever than to cause somebody else to sin. We need to understand that some opinions can be wrong, not because the opinion's wrong, but because the attitude and the lack of love is wrong. We need to watch out for that. Have a loving attitude in matters where there's a difference of opinion. And then we can discuss those things, and we can talk about it, and we can, you know, have some scriptures that show why that is or isn't okay, or whatever, and hopefully come to an agreement about it so that the person isn't offended. And when I say offended, I don't mean that, you know, it just they didn't like it or it hurt their feelings. We're not talking about that. That's not what offended means. It means so that they don't offend their conscience and think that they're doing something sinful. And once that's been straightened out, then things will be okay again. But to intentionally go about this, well, I've got a right to do this, and you can't make me stop. Well, no, can't make you stop, but we should be willing to stop to help those who are weak in the faith under those circumstances. And then we need to show charity or love in dealing with those in sin. Now, this is a little different than matters of faith where there's a false teacher involved, like that Jezebel who, you know, she needed to be handled roughly, and Jesus was going to take care of that one. He told her he was going to cast her into a bed, and he was going to kill all her children with death, and, you know, he was going to do some unpleasant things to her because she was the instigator of a whole cult in that church. But what about some who have just fallen into sin? How do we handle that? Well, of course, we don't just let it go or you wind up with a situation like Jezebel in Revelation 2. So it's got to be confronted, but it has to be done in love. But notice what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 21. He says, what will you? Shall I come to you with a rod? That's, you know, it seems like, you know, getting a beating. He says, shall I come to you with a rod or in love? And in the spirit of meekness. He said, it's your choice. You can be defiant and rebellious about this, and I will come with the rod, and I will discipline you and beat you into submission. Or you can do what's right, and then I'll come to you with love and spirit of meekness. He said, your choice. Do whatever you want to do. And he says, why then, in the first verse of the next chapter? It is reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. And so then he goes on to tell them how they ought to handle this individual. And let me tell you, the way he describes it and what he tells them to do to this individual, it doesn't sound very loving to a lot of people. He talks about handing him over to Satan and all these kind of things. That doesn't sound very loving. Well, discipline sometimes has to be very tough in order to be loving. And he explains then in 2 Corinthians, after they've done what he told them to do, in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verses 6 through 10, he says, sufficient to such a man is this punishment which was inflicted by many. So that contrarywise, you ought to forgive him and comfort him, lest he be swallowed up with overmuch sorrowing. Wherefore I beseech you that you would confirm your love toward him. See, sometimes when we're being disciplined, we don't recognize that it's out of love that we're being disciplined. So Paul says, you need to confirm your love now. Show him that you did it out of love. He said, because this is the end that I did write to you, to know that whether you'd be obedient in all things, and to whom you forgive anything, I forgive also. If I forgave anything, to whom I forgave it, for your sakes forgave I it in the person of Christ. He said, in essence, if I forgive it, then Christ forgives it too. I'm not going to forgive anything that Christ wouldn't forgive. And if you have seen that this man's changed his ways and you've forgiven him, then I'll forgive him and Christ will forgive him too. But notice what he says. He says, yeah, with the discipline, when somebody's in sin, you've got to be harsh sometimes, but then you've got to return to the loving relationship too. You've got to show the love in order to bring that person back. Well, then we also see that we need to learn to have charity in good works. In good works. 1 John 3, verses 16 through 18. John says, hereby perceive we the love of God, because He laid down His life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso has this world's good and sees his brother have need and shuts up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwells the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Now balance that with the passage where we're told if a man will not work, neither should he eat. So he's not just talking about just any old body who wants something should get it. But he's somebody is in need. Somebody's in a dire circumstance. We're not talking about somebody who just is a lazy bum and won't get out there and do anything. But we're talking about maybe somebody who can't work, or somebody who's lost a job, or somebody who's had an injury or of some kind, or has had some illness that's gotten them in a position where they have a need. Then what? He says, if you shut up your bowels of compassion, then the love of God doesn't dwell in you. If you've got the love of God, you're going to be compassionate to someone who is suffering and in need. Romans 13:10, Paul says, love works no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. When we have love, we're not going to do something unkind. We're going to do good things and good works for our neighbors. 1 Corinthians 13, Paul explains it this way. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity or love, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though, now this is the hardest one, because we understand those first two, here's a guy, he's just all puffed up with himself. He's just, he's all about him and he doesn't care about other people. But listen to this one. And though I bestow all my goods, now you think about that for a minute, even the poorest of us in here, think about what you've got. That's yours. Have you got a TV? Maybe a place you live? Maybe you've got a vehicle? You know, the kids got toys. You've got stuff. Now imagine, you give all. He didn't just say some of them. He said all. If I give all my goods to feed the poor, and then even go so far as to give my body to be burned. In other words, I go to the point where I risk my life. I give up my life. Now, you know, I think, now that's somebody, there's somebody who really knows what it's all about. But he says, if I do and don't have love, it profits me nothing. It's no good. It's worthless. Even if I give everything I've got to the poor, and even if I sacrifice my own life for somebody else, if I didn't do it out of love, it's no good. Good works have to be done out of love in order for them to have any meaning at all. And then, of course, in speech. We've got to have charity in our speech. We've got to have love in our speech. Ephesians 4, 14 through 16 says that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. But speaking the truth in love, we may grow up into Him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. From whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplies, according to the effective working in the measure of every part, makes increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. He says, you got to speak some words that are going to build other people up in love. That's the whole point of the church, is to build each other up. Build each other up in our love for our fellow man. Build each other up in our love for one another. Build each other up in our love for Christ. Build each other up in our love for God. We've got to build each other up in our love. And we do that by the things that we say just as much as by the things that we do. If I come to your house and I serve you and wonderful things for you and I cook you dinner and I clean your house, that would be amazing in and of itself. But if I can't even clean my own house, but if I did all these things, fixed everything that was broken, did all these things, but the whole time I was talking mean to you, you'd wonder about all those good things I was doing, wouldn't you? Well, why is it? And all the time I spent, boy, I can't believe I'm over here wasting my time doing this. I mean, you are taking up so much of my time. I'm over here spending this time with you, and I'd rather be watching a ball game, or I'd rather be going out to dinner, or I'd rather... Well, that's not building each other up in love when we do that kind of thing, is it? But we need to be building each other up in love. 1 Timothy 1, 5 through 6 says, now the end of the commandment, in other words, the goal, the result of the commandment is supposed to be this: charity out of a pure heart and of a good conscience and of faith unfeigned. But he says, from which some, having swerved, have turned aside unto vain jangling. Now, vain jangling is not what your keys do when you rattle them in your pocket but you're out of gas. That's not vain jangling. He's talking about babbling, just useless, worthless talk. And he said, some people have left from following the commandment of God to talking about things that are meaningless and useless and worthless. See, our speech needs to involve love, and that love has to be in accordance with God's will, with our faith and with our conscience and with His commandments. That's where our speech needs to be. It's interesting that when Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 7, he lists all of the things that we are to be building upon in our Christian lives. It's interesting that the final one, the one who that completed the cycle, the peak of Christian growth, as it were, is charity. That's the final stone that we have to add. It's probably because it's one of the most difficult ones to add. Add to your faith virtue. We can add virtue. We can learn to do the things that are good and not do the things that are bad. Add to your faith, to your virtue, knowledge. We can do that. We can study the Bible more and we can learn it and even maybe memorize some verses. Do Bible study books. Watch videos that teach us more about the Bible. Those kinds. We can do that. To your knowledge, temperance or self-control. Well, we can even do that. We can push ourselves away from the table after that fourth piece of cheesecake and not eat the fifth one. We can do that. We can show real restraint, real self-control. We can even show patience sometimes, as long as nobody bothers us too bad at just the wrong time. We can be pretty patient. Godliness, oh, well, that one, yes, of course, we'll be godly. Brotherly kindness. Oh, you know, when people are kind to me, I can be kind to them. But then he says to your brotherly kindness or your brotherly love, he says, you go a step further than that and you add the kind of godly love. The kind of love that God had that said, even though you're in rebellion against me and you hate me and you're responsible for killing my son, I love you anyway. That one's a little tougher. And that's one thing to control my own life and the things that I do. It's another thing to show love to those people who are, for the most part, pretty lovable and they're trying to do good things like I am. But it's a whole other story to love the unlovable. That's what God did for us, and that's what He calls on us to do. To show charity in all things. Not just the easy things, but in all things. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.